I am on a mission to strengthen, empower, and inspire caregivers to keep going, keep pushing, keep loving, and by all means, to keep caring. Thank you for tuning in to season 3 of the My Favorite Girl Caregivers Corner podcast. I am your host, Priscilla Jean-Louis. Hey, go ahead and hit that subscribe button so you can get a notification when the next episode drops. All right. Hey, caregiver family. I hope you all are having an absolutely great day. Thank you for joining me for episode 7 of season 3. I'd like to take a moment to thank those of you who have subscribed to the podcast and those who are following my caregiver journey on my social media platforms. And before I go any further, I ask if you haven't already, if you would take a moment now and subscribe to the podcast from whichever platform you are listening. Then go ahead and share it with your family and friends, especially those who are serving as caregivers. Also want you to follow me on my social media platforms. That's Facebook and YouTube at My Favorite Girl and Alzheimer's, and on Instagram and TikTok on My Favorite Girl in Oz. Yes, we do. I go out there and do some videos. Y'all will see my mom out there, as well as some other information that I share, because my goal and my mission is to keep you all in the know when it comes to Alzheimer's, as well as caregiving and the different, you know, things that go on with caregiving. So go out there, subscribe to the podcast as well as those social media platforms. The mission of this podcast is to bring inspiration, education, resources, hope, and strength to caregivers so you can keep going, keep pushing, keep loving, and by all means, keep caring. On this episode, I have the privilege of talking with Fabiola Jean-Charles. I hope I pronounced that correct. If not, she'll correct me, as well as Paulina Pendarvis of Big Bend Hospice. Fabiola is the Director of Transition Supportive Care, and Paulina is the Professional Relations Liaison. And so they are the ones that we're going to be talking about today. We're going to talk about hospice. I know that there's so many myths out there concerning hospice care and, you know, what it's all about. Most people, when you talk about hospice, they think end of life, but today, my guest and I are going to dispel those myths and give you some information that I hope will definitely help you and your family as you maneuver through your caregiver journey. And so at this particular time, I want to welcome you ladies. Welcome Fabiola and Paulina to the My Favorite Girls Caregiver Corner podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. And if y'all would just do me a favor and go ahead and just introduce yourselves to our listeners.
Certainly. My name is Fabiola Jean Charles, and I am the Director of Transition Supportive Care, as mentioned by Ms. Jean-Louis. I manage Transition Supportive Care, and Transition Supportive Care is a home-based palliative care program that provides specialized medical support to patients living with serious illness. And that support is focused on pain and symptom relief. So that's what I do. And Paulina?
So I work with Big Bend Hospice, and my role is to educate primarily physicians and nurse practitioners, as well as other clinical providers, about the role of Big Bend Hospice and the offerings that we all have.
Okay. And so again, as I said a little bit earlier, there's so many myths out there as it relates to hospice. And I read somewhere where it says that hospice care, those myths often keep people who need the help from getting the help. And hospice actually began as a response to the physical, emotional, and spiritual needs of patients and families that face long-term illness. But then there's only 1 in 3 eligible patients and their families that experience the benefits because people think what they think. And so we're going to talk about these myths because I was one of those persons who I held on to those myths as well.
Sure. As did I. Until I came to hospice, I thought that hospice care was something that happened in the last maybe 7 days of your life.
Right. You know, because that's all we knew about it, just really from, you know, the outside looking in, or just, you know, knowing people who, you know, they get that call and say, my loved one is going on hospice. And then what you've seen sometimes is that they go on hospice. And true enough, some of them within days, they are ill enough that they do end up passing away. But there's so many other sides that, you know, it's not the case, right? And so one of the myths, it says hospice is for patients who are bedbound and only have a few days to live. And yes. So when it comes to that, dispel that myth for us, one of you.
Oh, well, we would love to see patients come on earlier so that they can take advantage of all the resources that we offer. There is so much with the process of coming to terms with your potential departure from this world, and wanting to support your family, the caregivers. Hospice is much more than just the patient. It's all also about the family. And we follow them for 13 months beyond the death of their loved one, providing bereavement services.
Absolutely. And Ms. Jean-Louis, there is up to 6 months, according to Medicare, of support that patients with terminal illnesses can receive before the end of their life, right? So they don't have to wait till days or hours to come on service. They have about 6 months worth of support they can receive through hospice as the patient, you know, continues to decline and experience that terminal illness, for them and their families, right, to provide support.
And that's according to the book. We've had patients that are on hospice for many, many years.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And I know, like, for me, my experience with hospice, my grandmother, she passed away. Fabiola, you got to meet her. But prior to me getting her, you know, hospice care, I will never forget, she had taken a fall about a week or so prior to me making the call. And I'd taken her to the emergency room. I think that was probably one of the hardest days of my life, because she was 98 at the time. And, you know, taking a fall at that age, no, she was 97. She passed at 98. But taking a fall, it was like, oh my gosh, you know. And I take her into the emergency room and she's in pain and I'm having a fit because this is in the middle of COVID. And doing my best to really stay away from hospitals and all of that during COVID. And we end up sitting there in the emergency room for hours. And I'm trying not to touch anything or anybody.
Sure.
Same for her. And, you know, just the pain that she was in. And so took her that evening. They did x-rays, CT scans. They found nothing broken, what have you. But literally the next day she was just excruciating pain. And so I took her back. I'd already called because I found out about hospice. And so I already made the call, had the representative come over to give me the information. And they were just waiting for me to make that decision. And I'm still in between. I don't know. Right. And so I take her back to the emergency room. Didn't want to get her out the car because she was in so much pain. And so I didn't want to go through taking her in and having to bring her back out. So I go in and I talk with the person at the front. And, you know, the guy tells me, well, you know, if you brought her in last night and they saw nothing was broken, then nothing's broken. There's nothing we can really do. We can bring her back in, but it'll probably be the same. And so I go and I get back in my car and I remember a friend of mine through the Alzheimer's Association had mentioned to me, she had been on the podcast and she mentioned that her mom was under hospice care. So I literally sat in the parking lot and I gave her a call and I'm like, listen, I remember you talking about your mom being on hospice. This is my situation. What should I do?
Sure.
And by the time I finished talking with her, my mind was made up. I'm like, you know, we're going to do it. And when I tell you that was the best decision that I could have made, I mean, literally, unfortunately, she was only under hospice care for about 3 weeks, maybe going on a month before she passed away. But I just think that, you know, she was just at that place where it was, you know, time. But that time that they came in, I mean, the nurses, the CNAs, the doctors, you, Fabiola, I mean, everybody was phenomenal. And there was so much that I learned in that process that I sing praises to Big Bend Hospice everywhere. I am quick to refer because, I mean, phenomenal, phenomenal service. And so that's how I found out about it. And then after, as you stated early, Pauline, afterwards, I mean, the phone calls that I got from Big Bend Hospice just to offer that grief counseling. And I didn't take advantage of that part of it, but I knew it was there, right? Mm-hmm. And so all of that makes a difference in this process. Every bit of it makes a difference. And so even before I go any further, I'm going to tell you again, thank you. Thank you all for the work that you all do, for the services that you provide, because they are top notch. And what I have also come to realize just in some different platforms that I have been a part of on a national level with the Alzheimer's Association, what I realize is that not all hospices are the same. Sure. I've heard from people who have said their experience was totally different. So thank you. Kudos to Big Bend Hospice. So I'm going to put a plug in here. If you're in the area, make sure that you listen to all of this information. Take advantage of the services. They will take very good care of you. So another myth that's out there is that hospice is for people with no hope. Mm-hmm. What about that?
Well, one of the things that we frequently hear people say is that they wish they had called earlier.
Yeah.
That, you know, that the assistance that hospice can provide patients in meeting goals, whether that's spending time with their grandchildren and how they're going to do that, we can help them meet those goals. We can help them find the path that's going to allow them to do what is of value to them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so let me ask this question. This may be a little bit off from this in particular, but when it comes to, I know Big Bend Hospice, you all take care of this area, Tallahassee, and is it the surrounding areas as well, like Gadsden, Jefferson?
We cover eight counties: Gadsden, Leon, Jefferson, Madison, Taylor, Franklin, Wakulla.
Oh, that's pretty.
Oh, Liberty. Sorry, yes. Don't let me forget. Okay. Liberty.
So that's a pretty good area that you all cover. Now, as I stated a few moments ago, I know that hospice is different.
Sure.
Depending on where you are, but what are some of those things? So if I had somebody that's listening and they're down in South Florida, mm-hmm. what is something that is the same no matter where you are or should be the same when it comes to hospice, and how do they reach out or find out or get the information needed for this same type of care?
So hospice should always cover a case manager that's a nurse, physician care, access to nursing assistants and aides, mm-hmm. Counseling with a social worker or someone to help meet those determinants of care within the home, spiritual care, and volunteers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So every hospice should have volunteers that... And does that matter whether it's, because I know you said you've had some that are on longer than 6 months. So if there's somebody who may go beyond that expected time, mm-hmm. those volunteers would remain on that entire time. How does that work?
Well, we ask volunteers, and most hospices ask for a commitment from volunteers. So it might depend on the volunteer's commitment.
Okay.
For instance, we live in a college town, so we often have volunteers that are college age and may not be here in 2 to 3 years. But if you have a patient that is there for 2 to 3 years, they don't expire for their services. Their services will continue regardless.
Right.
So we can keep them at the same level, the same services for years and years, the duration of their care.
Right. Okay. Is there like an 800 number outside of our area, what is the best way for someone who, you know, their loved one need these services? What's the best way for them to receive these services? Is it through their physician? Is it through, you know, another agency in their area? How can they reach out if they're not in our area?
So within the state of Florida, I would strongly suggest that they check out the website for Florida Hospice and Palliative Care Association. Okay. They can check there and see all the member organizations within the state. You can always reach out to your physician. Oftentimes, spiritual care leaders are well aware of hospice services that are available in the area.
Right.
Okay. And so then, Florida Hospice and Palliative Care.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So if you all are listening and you're not hearing the Big Ben, go ahead and Google that, Florida Hospice and Palliative Care. What I'm going to do is I will put that information on my platform once we get off. I will put that information on there for you all to use that. But all of these services, I know a lot of people could benefit. I know for me, I am right now, it's myself and my daughter. My daughter recently graduated. I'm gonna give her a shout out. And for those that have been wondering, why has there not been another episode in a little while? That's why. We were on Operation Graduation. And so she recently graduated from high school and Tallahassee Community College. So we were that. And so now we're back and what have you. But right now it's the two of us. She's getting ready to transition to college in the fall. And so it will be just me. So even more, these volunteers become very, very helpful.
Sure.
When you are doing it. I had someone to call me recently who they don't have any family here, no friends here, and they need that extra just, you know, because respite is important.
Absolutely.
Yes. Able to step away and, you know, regather you, that self-care, all of that is important. That's what the volunteers help to do, give you that respite. And so, you know, please, if you're listening, take advantage of it. It's not just end of life. You're about to say something.
Yes. I was just going to say the volunteers fill a lot of different roles. So there's respite volunteers. There's vigil volunteers that can come towards the end. There's volunteers that come and take care of animals for you. There's volunteers that will help with light housekeeping to catch you up if you've gotten behind. There's a volunteer for just about everything, picking up your groceries if you need them.
Medications.
Well, they can't provide medications.
Pick up medications.
Pick up medications. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that the volunteers provide that it's amazing. And in addition to that, when you talk about respite care, each person that's on hospice, their caregivers qualify for respite care every 6 months. And so that's 5 days that they can go into a facility. Mm-hmm. Particularly here in Tallahassee, we have our own hospice house and they could stay at the hospice house for up to 5 days. So if you need to go visit family, if you have a high school reunion that you want to attend, you can do those kind of things and not be stuck and get those much needed breaks for your mental health.
And it's 5 days you can use to do whatever you want with. You can be in town just needing rest.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your loved one can be taken care of, you know, locally by our hospice house, in our hospice house, rather. But anywhere else in a facility to get that respite care.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And I understand. I never got to take advantage of it when my grandmother was here. But I understand that the hospice house is really, really nice as well.
And
so, like, you know, top of the line, suite for, and, you know, these are all resources, you all, that are out there that I didn't know. Some of what you just said, I didn't know that you all do those that will walk the pets, because, you know, for some people, they're puppies and what have you, you know, they're family members. They're important. When you're in a position where you can't do that, that is very helpful. And so I did not know that until you said it. And so, you know, hey, picking up, but all of that stuff helps. When you're in the thick of it, it helps. And so, you know, please, you all, take advantage. I'm going to take just a pause here and then we'll continue the conversation. But I want to give you right now as well the information where you can call. So here in Tallahassee, the Big Bend Hospice, they're located at 1723 Mahan Center Boulevard, and that's 32308. And then you can contact them via email at bigbenhospice.org. I'm sorry, that's a website, bigbenhospice.org. And the phone number, 850-878-5310 or 800-772-5862. If you are in need of any of these services, please take advantage. Give a call, visit the website, or contact Fabiola or Paulina. Either one of them will be glad to assist you. All right. And so we're going to move on. Another myth. Hospice is only for cancer patients. A lot of people think that, you know, it seems like cancer, of course, you know, it seems to, you know, be more known than more other diseases. And so, you know, and then because of how it progresses sometimes, sure, I think that's why a lot of people will label it that way. But not just for cancer patients, huh?
No. In fact, our number one diagnosis for hospice patients is dementia.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. 1 in 3 people in the United States will have a dementia diagnosis by their end.
And so I can relate to that one because for me, you know, and we're going to talk about transitions in just a moment, but right now, my mom is under the transitions supportive care, and her diagnosis is dementia. She has Alzheimer's. And so even in talking about or thinking about that one, I know that someone can be diagnosed with Alzheimer's and they can actually be in stages of Alzheimer's for a number of years.
Sure. And
so my question with that is, you know, how long can someone with Alzheimer's remain, you know, with the program?
I think the issue is, when can we take them on into hospice versus transitions?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Transitions can take them much earlier than hospice can. When hospice, we're generally looking at them being incontinent of both urine and stool, bedbound, unable to speak more than a couple of words,
right,
those kind of pieces. But transitions can help them well before that.
Absolutely.
Okay. And I did step ahead of myself there. You are absolutely correct. So what I want to do at this point, let me transition over into that part. And let's talk about the transition supportive care. That, Fabiola, you're the director for that.
Yeah.
And I take advantage of that. And so I think it's been about a year now.
Yes.
That my mom has been on the transitions care. So tell us about transitions care, what it's all about.
Sure. So transition supportive care is a community-based palliative care program here in the Big Bend area. And we provide specialized medical support for patients living with serious illness. And our care is focused on pain and symptom relief. So you oftentimes hear of palliative care support in hospitals. Well, we provide along the continuum of care, we provide palliative care support in the home. So when the patients leave the hospital, you know, palliative care stops, right? But we are in the community going into the home to continue to offer palliative care support. So we get referrals from the various doctor's offices in town, both hospitals here in Leon County, Big Bend Hospice, as well as people calling from the community because they've researched or heard about us and called to inquire about their loved one's eligibility for our support. So, you know, all care is appropriate for anyone living with a serious illness, regardless of their prognosis or diagnosis. So with palliative care, there is no expectation of end of life, short-term life expectancy, right? So patients on service can be with us for a number of years, like Paulina says. Mm-hmm. You know, the recommendation for one to engage palliative care is at the time of diagnosis. Of course, that doesn't always happen, right? Because once you hit with the diagnosis, the serious illness diagnosis, hardly any words after that, you know, are remembered by the patient or caregiver if they're present. Right. Right. So the other time that, you know, is recommended for engaging palliative care support is as soon as possible. Right. If it's not done at the time of diagnosis, as soon as you find out about it. And that can come from the doctor's office. It doesn't necessarily have to come from the doctor's office. And people can research, look online for services available in their communities. I love the internet and I encourage more people to use it, you know, because, you know, oftentimes, you know, I think a lot of people expect, you know, recommendations and, you know, referrals to be sent, you know, to their primary care physician's office or specialists they're working with, but that doesn't always happen. Mm-hmm. So in times where support is necessary, look into it, research it. I'm living with this condition. What is available to help me? I was listening to a physician recently, and I love what she shared, because she said palliative care is one of those services that's been around for a long time, but unfortunately, it is underutilized. And part of what she says palliative care is uniquely positioned to address are things that people want to know more about after they hear that they've been diagnosed with an illness. And she says three questions that they often hear about from patients is after they've been diagnosed with a serious illness, whatever the condition is. The three questions are, what is happening to me, right? Second is, what is going to happen to me as this disease progresses? And third, what can be done to help me? Okay. And palliative care is uniquely positioned to help answer those questions, right? We can educate the patient about the illness that they're experiencing, and offer education as to what is going to happen as the disease progresses, as well as offer support as they're experiencing both of those things, you know, the onset of the diagnosis, as well as symptoms that may come from the illness as it progresses. You know, we have nurse practitioners on our team. So we offer a team approach to care, much like hospice. We offer a team approach to care where we have a team of interprofessionals, an interdisciplinary team of professionals providing support to the patients. So we have a medical director, we have nurse practitioners on our team, we have licensed clinical social workers, as well as community resource navigators, all of which serve specific roles to support the patient and caregiver along the serious illness experience.
Okay. Now, go ahead.
I'm so sorry. I think it's important for people to know, too, that when they receive transition supportive care or hospice care, it doesn't mean that they have to stop seeing their physician.
Right.
Okay. They still have that resource.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And with palliative care, too, one thing I'd like to mention, Ms. Jean-Louis, is palliative care can be received alongside curative treatment. So you mentioned cancer patients earlier, you know, people thinking that they're the primary recipients of hospice care. Well, cancer patients, or any patients for that matter, on our services, regardless of their diagnosis, can continue to receive treatment, whatever treatment is for their illness, with palliative care.
Now, I don't want to take for granted that everybody knows what palliative care is, right? Mm-hmm. So can you just explain briefly what palliative care is?
Yes. So palliative care is a defined medical specialty. So think cardiology, oncology, pulmonology. It's a defined medical specialty, but what it is designed to do is manage symptoms of a serious illness and respond to pain and offer a support related to pain management associated with that serious illness that the patient is experiencing. So think of palliative care like you would a dermatologist, right? They respond to issues with the skin. Mm-hmm. Well, palliative care covers any diagnosis, regardless of the diagnosis. It directly addresses symptoms that may come from that serious illness as it progresses. And offers pain management to improve quality of life. Ultimately, that's what palliative care is about, right? It seeks to improve the quality of life for not only the patient, but the caregiver as well. So you know, palliative care looks at the whole person, not just the physiological symptoms of the illness that they're experiencing, mm-hmm. but also the emotions that may come with this experience, as well as, you know, the spiritual needs that may arise, and psychosocial support, you know, that the patient and family may need as they go through the serious illness experience.
Okay. So somebody that has recently been diagnosed with cancer, somebody who may be experiencing some type of heart issue, or, you know, end stage renal failure or any of those type things. So, and I'm just naming just a few of them, but any diagnosis that is serious on that level, they can qualify for transitions care.
Absolutely. And Michelle, one distinction I'd like to make really quickly too is when we think about serious illness, just to make it clear for people, and helping them to determine whether or not they or their loved ones would qualify. Serious illness, in my view, is defined as an illness that is difficult or impossible to treat. So okay. If you can think of it in that context, you know, that's what we mean by, you know, saying serious illness.
Okay. And so there you have it. You know, if that's you, we just want you to know that there is help and there is support out there for you. And I can tell you, as one who receives the care, as I stated earlier, second to none, I get a call at least monthly with a check-in, just simply saying, hey, calling to make sure everything's okay. The other thing that I do love about it, they're not just checking on my mom to see how she's doing, but they want to know, how are things with you? Do you need any assistance? What else can we do for you? I love that, right? Because especially as a caregiver, sometimes you kind of become the forgotten one. That's the reality. You become the forgotten one when it comes to, you know, when you're a caregiver. And so the fact that you all also reach out to make sure, because hospice is about, whether it's transition supportive care or full hospice, it's really about the whole family. Yes, it's about the patient, but it also entails the full family and making sure that everybody in the family is okay. Because one thing for certain, if the caregiver is not okay, they're not going to be able to take care of the patient who needs the care themselves. And so that's one of the things that I have grown to really value and appreciate when it comes to the hospice and you know, what you all do. Now, what is the steps, you know, what can they expect if someone gives you a call and they're interested in the supportive grid, supportive care, transition supportive care? What can they expect from you when they make that call?
Sure. So they'll speak with our intake specialist, who will inquire from the patient or family about which of our three disciplines that they'd like to receive support from first. So is it the nurse practitioner they wish to see first? Is it the licensed clinical social worker or our navigators? So our nurse practitioner, you know, is the clinical professional who will manage the symptoms of the serious illness, as well as offer pain management support if that's needed. Our licensed clinical social worker will address psychosocial needs, right? Offer emotional support, counseling, bereavement support as the patient and family is going through this serious illness experience. And lastly, our navigators are the professionals who will address social determinants of health. Is there a need in the home? Is there a need for housing? Is there a need for benefits? Do they need assistance applying for Medicaid, food stamps, Meals on Wheels, Life Alert, whatever the benefit is that they need to apply for, or navigators can assist with that. Is there a need for food in the home? Whatever the insecurity is, or navigators can assist the family in responding to those needs. And I think that's something you mentioned earlier, Ms. Jean-Louis, I'd like to expand on, you know, during your experience with hospice, you mentioned how much help was available. And that's what not just transition supportive care, but hospice offers, is a team, right? A team of people who can help along the journey. You let us know what you need and we can pretty well make it happen, right? We can't respond to every need, We are one part of the care team, but as much as possible, we'll try to assist as much as we can. So support is necessary.
Well, and you said we can't solve every problem, but I will say that because of the benefits of our foundation, we are able to solve a lot of things that are not considered transitions or hospice care. For instance, if somebody has a hot water heater that's gone out and they don't have the funds to replace it, well, you need hot water to wash your hands. Right. So we've had the foundation replace hot water heaters in people's homes, or fix holes in roofs, or provide medications that for whatever reason weren't covered or weren't part of that specific diagnosis. They provide so much more. And we're able to take on all those folks that don't have insurance. If you're uninsured, we don't go away because of it. If you meet the criteria for hospice or transitions, Big Bend Hospice and Transition Supportive Care will take you.
See, I am learning even more, even in this conversation. So this is another reason why I have the conversation, you know, because it's another resource for people that need. I mean, listen, there's a lot that comes along with caregiving. And so any amount of help that you can get, you know, it's definitely worth it. And I know when my grandmother, and again, she was on full hospice, but when I say everything, I mean hospital bed. And it's like I made the call. I said, okay, let's, you know, I would like to do this. And literally the very next day, I had a hospital bed, I had oxygen, I had everything that was needed for that time. And the absolute best nurse, you know, and CNA that, you know, just a phone call away with no issue at all when you call, because they were, especially towards the end, I had a lot of questions. And so I'm calling and I mean, just as nice and friendly as can be, and literally making sure, do you need anything? I'm talking about pull-ups and bed pads and, you know, all of that stuff that is much needed. And so, you know, absolutely great resource right here in our community that a lot of people just, they don't know about. And again, I'm learning even more. I thought I knew, at least enough, but thank you for this added information, because, you know, I want people to have this resource, to give you all a call, because, you know, that food shortage, you know, we're living in that time, grocery, they're high, and everybody, when you are hit, you're faced with an illness, and, you know, you find out the blue and you can no longer work, and, you know, you can't purchase food anymore because you're not working. And some people are having to decide between feeding their family and paying for the cost of medication, because medication is so expensive. And so all of this stuff matters. And so to know that this is also something that you all assist with, I'm grateful even more for the work that you all do, for what Big Bend Hospice, you know, your services that you provide. And so again, give them a call, Big Bend Hospice, 850-878-5310 or 800-772-5862. I also have the contact information on my website for those that also would need that information. So Fabiola's contact information is on there. That website is www.priscillajjeanlouis.com. So visit the website. If you don't get it, if you are listening to the podcast only, visit the website and go over to the resource spot, and there you'll find their contact information. So that is the Transition Supportive Care. We've talked about hospice as a whole now. One other thing too that I want to plug into, and I think that this is important. I think a lot of people also kind of shy away from hospice because of the fact that end of life component is there. And so one of the things that I realize even the more is very important is the advanced directives, that being able to plan. You all call it PEACE on your website, which is standing for planning early about care at the end, right? A lot of people don't like to talk about it because even I myself, you think that death is just so morbid and you just kind of don't want to, you don't want to think about it, let alone talk about it. Mm-hmm. But it's so important, especially, you know, we just coming off of, I guess we're off. I know there's still some cases, but, you know, at the heels of COVID.
COVID, yeah.
We lost so many people so quickly. And that end of life planning, it's important. You know, I don't want to say luckily, but luckily, with my grandmother, we had actually completed her five wishes some years ago. She ended up having to have a heart bypass surgery, and they presented it to us at that time. And I actually sat down with her and we went through the five wishes. And it's literally just the patient or yourself being able to tell your loved ones what those five things are that you want to happen in the event that, you know, you can't make those decisions for yourself. You know, you go in to have a surgical procedure, even right now. I've had quite a few procedures, and every time, now, I will be honest in saying I haven't completed the five wishes just yet, but there are some things that I am doing because you realize that life is but a vapor, right?
Yes.
You know, we're living in a time where everybody, young, old, middle age, you don't know. Right. And so it's important, and it will take away so much stress from your loved ones when they already know what funeral home you want to go to, what songs you want played at your funeral, do you want to be resuscitated, that type stuff, right? And so you all offer that. So can you tell us a little bit about your assistance with the advanced directives and why, coming from you all who deal with this, why is it so important that people really took advantage of this?
I think you touched on it beautifully, Ms. Jean-Louis, but it's important, absolutely, because it's such a gift, right? It's a gift to your family to know that they don't have to guess, you know, and they don't have to get, you know, into disagreements about, well, mom would have wanted this, or, you know, I know they would have wanted that. No, it would be documented, right? It's your wishes explicitly stated. So your family, it's sort of a blueprint, if you will. Right. When this happens, this is what I want done. So there can be no disagreement about that. You know, it's a vital document. It's vital to, you know, document those wishes and, you know, give your family an opportunity to respect them, to honor them in your stead.
Well, and give you some control of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, do you want to be in a position where you might be on life support, but you don't feel like you're there any longer?
Right.
And I would encourage a lot of young people to do this because it's a great opportunity to fill it out yourself and then have that conversation with your parents of, hey, I'm filling this out. Do you have this? What would you put here? And tell them where you've put it. That's a big thing. Make sure that that they know where you've done it and where they can find it if anything does happen. Because you're right. You never know. We never know.
Yeah. Because I did it. Oh my gosh. It's been, I think when I did hers, it was a number of years before she even, you know, ended up coming to live with me, but I kept the document. And so when she got here and she went to the hospital, I had all of those documents. And it made things a whole lot easier. And so, you know, if you can and will take advantage, you know, don't think, oh, I have until tomorrow. I just don't know. I mean, you don't know. I've seen people close to me, people that I know of over the last, you know, just over the last couple of weeks who, you know, they're gone, right now.
Yes.
And so, you know, you never know. And as morbid as it seems, as you stated, you know, give your family that gift. Give them the gift of not having to deal with that issue at all. Because for some people, it's not easy. You know, that fight that comes sometimes between family members, you can avoid all that altogether.
We offer the five wishes in a digital version, too, that anybody can access on our website. Okay. They only need to fill out a brief form, provide their email address, and it will be sent directly to them. So that could be anybody in your listening area could utilize that.
Okay. And that's on the website. So that's at bigbenhospice.org. So bigbenhospice.org. You go on there. You're able to find that form. Go ahead. Do it. Digital copy is great. You can email it to yourself. You can email it to your loved ones, and they'll have it. And nobody's having to wonder what to do because you are in control of that. And then just if you all would, are there any other programs that you all provide that we haven't touched on that, you know, we can also share with our listening audience?
Well, I would love to talk about the Caregiver Renewal Institute. It is a new opportunity. It is completely separate from Big Bend Hospice or Transitions Care. You do not have to be affiliated with Big Bend Hospice or Transitions Care in order to utilize it. It is a resource with in-person classes here in Tallahassee, Zoom classes, financial resources, legal resources, all kinds of things for caregivers so they don't have to look and search for those things, all in one location, and it's all free.
Mm-hmm. All right. And how would they get in contact or become a part of that? Where's the, I do have a flyer. I am going to put that flyer on my website as well as on my social media platform. But for those who are listening who may not see the video, how can they sign up for those classes if they'd like to take them?
All of the resources are available online at www.caregiverrenewal.org. Once again, that's caregiverrenewal.org. Or you can call 850-353-0280.
All right, there you have it. And I am looking at the flyer now, and it says that they offer classes and resources for persons with dementia, cancer, cardiopulmonary conditions, and other specific health conditions. There's classes for long distance caregiving. So let me throw this plug in there. Just because you're not here with the person having to care for them directly does not mean that you can't still be a caregiver. So there are classes for that. They also have caregiving for military service members or veterans, fall prevention, financial and legal resources, grief and loss for adults and youth, wellness strategies such as breathing exercises, self-care tools, and restorative yoga, all of that, preparing for end of life and more. So take advantage of that. And you know, I think I'm going to go on and look at some of myself. I'm always trying to learn more information that I can share with others. And so I'll probably end up going on there, just looking at it and probably taking some of the courses myself. And listen, you all, there are resources in Spanish.
Yes.
So if you have persons that you're connected to who, you know, are Spanish speaking, here's another resource for them as well. And so by all means, we're providing these opportunities, these resources for you. I just want you to be able to have them so that your journey of caring can be one that is not stressful for you, or less stressful anyway for you, if you take advantage of these resources and services. You all also offer bereavement, not just for adults, but I saw as well where you have a children's class as well as a teen class. So these are for children who have lost a loved one, correct?
That's correct.
Tell us a little bit about those programs.
Well, they offer something every month for both age groups. It doesn't have to be a recent loss, as children grieve very differently than adults. And they can interact with people that have also experienced something similar, as well as being under the guidance of a licensed clinical social worker. Right. We also have camps every year, one for teen and one for children that have experienced loss. Mm-hmm. And all of those services are free.
Okay. Now, for those classes, do they have to be under hospice care, or can it just be for anybody who has experienced loss and want that grief counseling?
Anyone who has experienced those loss.
Okay. All right. That's great, because, you know, children don't always know how to navigate through a loss, especially, you know, when they're young, they don't understand it. And so, you know, when you're a parent and you're having to grieve yourself, and you have a little one that you just can't explain it, I think that is very beneficial as well for that. And then the last thing that I want to touch on, just a few moments more before we get off, is the volunteers. With your volunteers, if there is someone who is interested, I have wonderful, wonderful, wonderful volunteers through the Transitions Care Program. I'm always bragging on them. I have one who started with me, who, you know, she was under, you all are not doing the AmeriCorps program anymore, but she started under the AmeriCorps program, and I think that was a year commitment. Mm-hmm. Her year was up and she still wanted to volunteer. I appreciate that. Okay. Mm-hmm. She is the reason why I get to go to church on Sundays. Mm-hmm. And that means a lot to me as somebody who, you know, very strong in my faith, love going to church, facing the possibility of not being able to consistently go, and to have her to say, you know, I'm not a part of that program anymore, but I would still like to volunteer. Wow. And she agreed to be here. She comes every Sunday. Mm-hmm. So that I can go to church. And when she's not going to be here, she will notify me well in advance to let me know. And I can't pay for that, right? Like I am so appreciative. And then the other one who is under the program, who has been here, I think, since January, same thing. I mean, phenomenal. The way that they care for my mom, because that's always important to me, no matter who comes, I need to make sure that they care for her the way I do, or very close. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so there's a certain level, because my mom has Alzheimer's, and there's a certain level of patience that you must exhibit with those, because you don't know, you know. And I often tell people, you go into their world. Doesn't matter what your world looks like right now. If the shoe is green, then it's green.
Yes. Right.
Yes. You have to go where they are. And mm-hmm. and I watch them. You know, I watch anybody who's, you know, taking care of my mom, because I want to see how they treat her.
Of course.
And I tell you, they are phenomenal. I mean, the way that they never raise their tone, you know, their voice, they are extremely helpful. And so that's been absolutely a great help to me, great help for me to just be able to unwind, mm-hmm. you know, and be able to do some things. At one point, I was having to go to the grocery store on Sundays, mm-hmm. because that's when I had somebody here. So I have somebody now who's here on Saturdays, so I can go and do what I need to do.
Sure.
And not be pressured with that. And so, you know, when it comes to volunteering, I know that we as the recipients, you know, are so grateful for that service. But I know that there also has to be a benefit for those who are doing it. And so if there's somebody out there who says, you know what, I have some time. I love, you know, being around older people, or whatever it is, but caring for people, and they want to become a volunteer. Mm-hmm. How can they go about becoming a volunteer through your programs?
Mm-hmm. Well, The first thing is they have to do an application, and they'll do a pre-screening. Because we're placing people in someone's home, there's a background check that's required.
Thank you.
And in addition to that, we're generally looking for a year commitment.
Right.
We would prefer that somebody not have experienced a personal loss in the last 12 months. Mm-hmm. So that they're over that hump, so to speak.
Sure.
And can not be triggered by the experience that they have in the home.
Right.
But we do a lot to let the volunteers know that we appreciate them, but they are wonderful, wonderful individuals that are attracted to providing support to people in the community.
Absolutely. And Ms. Jean-Louis, they can go to the website, bigbenhospice.org. to get more information about how to contact the volunteer department manager, Katie Mandel, to get more information and get the application that's also available on the website.
Okay. We have specific volunteers too that work with veterans because we have a significant veterans program. So if you are a veteran and are interested in volunteering, you can serve on the veterans group to other veterans so that they can speak about their experiences and understand it.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. And you all provide training to them as well, right?
Yes.
We do.
Absolutely.
Okay. So they get the training. They have a background screening, so you don't have to be concerned about, oh, I don't know. They're all screened well.
Yes.
They have to sign in and out just like they would on a job.
Yeah.
And so that care, you know, I mean, that we're receiving, but even being a volunteer, you know, and I take this pause as well. Those of you that take your time to volunteer, because you don't have to, you know, say that all the time. Nobody has to do anything, right? But those that care enough to show up and to help from one caregiver who is caring, I say for all of us, thank you, because you don't. There's so many other things that you can be doing with your time. But to just care for somebody else, put yourself and your time to the side to care for those, because some of these people that are receiving it, they do. They need that support. And so, you know, I say thank you to those of you that are doing it. Now, I know through transitions, there's a certain, you know, volunteers, but I think you all also have volunteers that actually go to the house, the hospice house, that who, you know, they're just there, you know, in that, you know, me, myself personally, I have to give them all kudos. I don't do well with, you know, that, but there's some people that's just their area of passion. Yeah. And so, you know, those different areas, I guess when they call, they'll let you know where they want to work, what they're comfortable with, right?
Right.
And so, hey, y'all, that's another opportunity that's out there. If you're looking to volunteer, some people that retired, maybe looking for something to do.
Sure.
They will take all volunteers that will come and help.
Yeah, and you don't have to volunteer specifically with patient care. There's administrative roles that they can do. There's help with fundraisers. We can find a spot for just about anybody if they're interested in volunteering.
Okay, awesome. So there you go. If you're looking for something else to do, Big Ben Hospice. And I tell you, it's one of the best places that you can go and offer your time. What they give, I think that it would be great to be able to give that back to them for the services that they provide. So ladies, thank you all so very much.
Thank you.
For your time. Thank you so much for all of the information that you have provided to us, to this audience. Again, you all in this area, there's 8 counties that they're serving here in Leon County for Big Ben Hospice, but throughout the state of Florida, make sure that you contact that hospice, Florida Hospice and Palliative Care line so that even if you're outside of this area, you can receive these services that are needed. Don't fall into the myths of what people have said in regards to hospice. There's so much more to it than what myself and so many others have fought. Utilize these resources. Again, Transition Supportive Care. They're located at 1669 Mahan Center Boulevard here in Tallahassee, Florida, 32308. Telephone number is 850-446-1077. You can also contact Big Ben Hospice at 1723 Mahan Center Boulevard, Tallahassee, Florida, 32308. Visit the website at bigbenhospice.org. You can call them directly at 850-878-5310 or 800-772-5862. Again, that information is also on my website at www.priscillajeanlouis. Go over to the resource spot. You'll find that information and you can contact them. By all means, take advantage of these resources. Do what it is you need to do to make sure that your caregiver journey is as smooth as it can be for you. Thank you again for listening to the My Favorite Girl Caregivers Corner podcast. Catch me again for the next episode. And hey, don't forget, go ahead and subscribe to the podcast as well as the social media platforms. Until next time, you all, keep going, keep pushing, keep loving, and by all means, keep caring.
I love it.
Thank you again for listening to this episode of the My Favorite Girl Caregivers Corner podcast. I'd also like to invite you to visit my website at www.priscillajeanlouis.com. There you'll find more information about me and my journey with My Favorite Girl. There's also the resource spot where you'll find many resources to help you as you are on your journey. Hey, stay connected and remember, no matter what, keep going, keep pushing, keep loving, and by all means, keep caring.